tomb time. There is metaphysical meaning to the 3 days between the crucifixion and the resurrection. These 3 days symbolize the time it takes for the physical world to catch up with a change in consciousness, for light to ascend again after darkness has overwhelmed us. Resurrection occurs when we hold to love despite appearances and thus invoke a miracle. Sometimes when we have been deeply wounded, there's a time during which we have to let our souls bleed, take the pain, and wait till the cycle completes itself. You can't rush a river or a heartbreak. Just know that this too shall pass. The 3 days is referred to by a friend of mine as tomb time, during which it might seem that all hope is lost, when in fact the miracle is just around the corner. Every night is followed by a new day. The ego has its way with us in cruel and vicious ways, to be sure, yet we are delivered by God each day to a new morning, the promised land of inner peace. We've all known crucifixion and then lived through a tomb time when it seemed as though the light of our lives might never return. Yet the movement of the universe is always in the direction of ultimate love. In the words of Martin Luther King Jr., the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. The ego roars, but God will always have the final say. Our crucifixions deal us a material blow, but in the hands of God, the blow can become a spiritual gift. No matter what happens in our lives, we can become better people because of it. If we had not stumbled, we could not have gotten back up. And now that we have gotten back up, our backbones are a little straighter and our heads a little higher. There is nothing more beautiful than the mantle of survivor. There's nothing more illumined than the resurrected body, the new personality that emerges when the old one has been laid to rest. Crucifixions take us into the darkness of the soul, where we wrestle with the demons of shame and loathing, anger and hatred. We are asked to die to so many parts of ourselves, to lay down both sword and shield, to give up judgment and willfulness and hate. Yet when we stand there naked, having forgiven so much, we can feel a sense of lightness return to our hearts, and we know we have made it to another place. Crucifixion is never the end. In a way, it is just the beginning. With every scar, we become carriers of the universal wound, as well as a transmitter of a universal healing. When we have suffered and transcended our suffering, we emerge with sacred knowledge embedded in ourselves. In our life, at least, some darkness has been overcome, and we will be led to others who have similarly overcome, as well as to those who have not yet but will be inspired to in our presence. Together, we will form a unified field of resurrective possibility, an opening that does not just bless our own lives but the entire world. And that is what is going on the planet today. People are feeling the pain of the world almost like an inoculation. We are hurrying to rise up so we can create a higher field for everyone. The women around Jesus waited and prayed at his feet while he was crucified. These women symbolize the friends we have who bear witness to our crucifixions and care about our suffering. When they go to the tomb to claim the body, i.e., when they have empathized with our pain and now accompany us on our psychic journey back to wholeness, they often find that the person we were before no longer exists. They find, when the Spirit of God has moved in us, that we were not defeated, but we rather became our better selves. We die to who we used to be, that's true, but who we will be now is a spirit reborn and refreshed. The fever has broken, the tears have dried, and we emerge again into the light of our true being. Such is the resurrection of God, his light upon our souls. Rebirth. There is passion to the crucifixion, but there is passion to the resurrection as well. It cannot be seen with physical eyes, however, for the emergence of a reborn self is not a material occurrence. You have the same eyes, but there's a new light in them. You have the same brain, but it operates differently. You have the same heart, but it is beating with his now. And the resurrection is not a moment, but a pattern. For every 2 steps into the light, We might fall one step back into darkness, but once we are on the way up, once we have glimpsed the one who has promised to take us there, there is no real going back. It doesn't matter what anyone says or does to try to stop you. You're on your way to a brand new life, not just for yourself, but for others as well. And you're not a martyr. You're a teacher of love. You have seen the light, and you're walking towards it. Just know who you are and who lives within you. He is risen, and so are you. The power of faith. In both the Bible and A Course in Miracles, it is stated, "Blessed are those who have faith who cannot see." It's easy to believe in love when you're surrounded by kindness. It's not so easy when you're confronted with the judgments and the attacks of the world. If you have faith in a reality of love that lies beyond a disaster, then you become an opening for its transformation. A miracle worker does not look away from darkness, but through it to the light beyond. Faith is a kind of positive denial. We don't deny that something is happening in the physical world. We simply have faith that this reality is but mere illusion before the love of God. We deny the ultimate reality of the world itself. So does your faith lie in the reality of the crucifixion or in the reality of the resurrection? We tend to have greater faith in the limitations of the world than in the limitlessness of God's power. When the disciples of Jesus thought they were going to drown, their faith lay in the power of the storm. When Jesus came out and walked on water, he didn't say to his disciples, "Oh, ye of little walking on water proficiency, didn't you read the brochure?" He said, "Oh, ye of little faith." Faith means we're open to the possibility of miracles, knowing that when we stand on the ground of love within the space of true holiness, then all material forces are automatically reprogrammed to work on our behalf. We don't have to do anything new so much as become someone new in order to fundamentally change our lives. And then we do not just believe in the resurrection, we share the resurrection. As we humble ourselves and step back with the ego, allowing God to lead the way, miracles occur naturally. No stress, no strain. A change of heart. While traveling in Amsterdam several months ago, I noticed that something about myself had changed. I have traveled extensively since I was a child and visited scores of museums throughout the world. I have always delighted in portraits, landscapes, sculpture, oriental screens, decorative arts, jewelry design, and all the other visual treats that are offered in such places. But one particular category of painting never moved me, and I always passed it by without giving much attention. That was nautical art. Ships in the harbor, ships on the sea, ships wherever. It simply wasn't my thing. But if you're visiting museums in Holland, you're going to see pictures of boats. And this time, for whatever reason, they touched me in a different way. This time, when I saw a painting of a ship on a rough sea, facing the clear possibility of shipwreck, my mind went to the sailors who were on the ship, the reasons they were there, the terror they would be feeling, and whether or not they survived. I thought about their loved ones on land and what they felt when they heard there was a storm at sea. I thought about whether or not the painter had ever seen such a roiling ocean, and if he hadn't, how did he know what it looked like? I realized that for many years I had looked at those paintings, yet I hadn't really seen them at all, for I had brought nothing of my heart to the experience. On the same trip, I visited the house of Anne Frank. It's been years since I read The Diary of Anne Frank, and I thought I had internalized her story and its meaning. Yet visiting the Anne Frank Museum with my daughter on this trip, I could barely stop crying. In fact, I couldn't stop crying as I walked through the rooms of her family's house. Seeing where she slept, unable to run outside or play or even look at sunlight through the window. Seeing the places her father pasted pictures from magazines on her wall so it wouldn't seem quite so dreary. Thinking of the extraordinary daily tension and fear that were experienced by those hiding in those rooms as well as by their friends who were hiding them. Thinking of all the years they survived that way, only to have their hiding place betrayed a year before the end of the war. And thinking of Anne's horrifying days at Bergen-Belsen concentration camp, only to die 1 month before the liberation of the camps. I could hardly bear the weight of such sorrow, mixed with Anne's profound and compassionate insights into the nature of the human heart. I thought about her father's survival, his learning of his family's death, his publishing Anne's diaries, and always with the realization that this same tale of suffering was experienced not once, but 6 million times. As we walked through the rooms and read the exhibits, I told my daughter how important it is to bear witness to the suffering of others. For such pain as the Frank family's is experienced still, all over the world, by people as unfortunate today as they were then. And only if we allow ourselves to grieve for them all will we devote ourselves, as God would have us do, to creating a different kind of world. At one point, my daughter said to me sweetly, "Oh, Mommy, please don't cry." And I thought to myself, "Oh, Emma, please do." There are those who would not visit such a museum, who would rather shut themselves off, not feel the agony or face the horror of all the suffering in our world. We do whatever we can to distance ourselves from it. But when Jesus said to the disciples who were falling asleep in the Garden of Gethsemane, "What? Can you not remain awake with me 1 hour?" I think he was referring to our need to remain awake when others suffer. If nothing else, doing so reminds us how extraordinarily fortunate we are, and I do mean extraordinarily fortunate, to have a roof over our heads, food in our stomachs, and the right to simply see sunlight each day. As long as that is not true for everyone, there is much, much work for us to do on this earth. And if we will not do it, who will? Even when there's nothing we can specifically do to help those who suffer, remaining awake to their predicament exudes its own kind of moral force. There are those in the world, imprisoned, in pain, for whom the difference between choosing life and choosing death lies simply in knowing that someone cares. After visiting the Anne Frank house, I sat drinking coffee at a cafe right across the canal. On the same street where she so longed to run and play but could not, I was free to wander and shop and sip coffee and laugh out loud. By what gift of fate am I so fortunate? There is a building in Amsterdam where all the Jews were rounded up by the Nazis for deportation to the concentration camps, where many of them would be gassed immediately upon arrival. A plaque on the building says we should take a moment and remember them. In that moment, I think the departed souls feel our blessing. Hopefully, in some way, it helps bring them peace. As for us, may it bring us depth. May our hearts explode from the sheer size of it all. For therein lies the only real hope for humankind. Resurrection. It is the consciousness of peace, not the behavior of war, that will ultimately turn back the tides of fear. And it is incumbent upon each of us to foster that consciousness. I'm not referring to just making things better. I am referring to transcending all physical laws, bending the rules of time and space, and coming alive where we were previously dead. It's time to see miracles in our own lives, to be resurrected from the littleness of our former selves. Through God, these things are possible. These miracles are available, and they are necessary at this time. It doesn't matter what someone said when you were a child. You know you're smart and attractive now. It doesn't matter what happened before. You can rise up and start over now. It doesn't matter what they did to you. Forgiveness can wash you clean now. Boys who have become men will now become great men. Girls who have become women will now become great women. We will give birth to our better selves. Those who rise to the heights of their potential will not be the exception. They will become the rule. Through them, and by them I mean us, a plan will emerge for the salvation of the world. A new world awaits all of us as our minds are healed by love.